This is Bristol Bay and Beyond, KDLG's weekly news magazine. It's Friday, November 20th. I'm Dave Benninger. Thanks for joining us. Coming up this week, we'll see what some students learned at a recent leadership conference in Anchorage.
Nobody really appreciates what they have in life. They have foods on their plates. They have clothes on their back. And then so I had this idea where a day where we would give thanks, or a weekend, a festival, or celebration.
Plus, we have some tips on how to be more effective at the Board of Fish meetings next month in Anchorage.
Find that person out there who is looking at you. Look right back at them. And just try to address your message at the people that you're speaking towards.
We'll find out more on these monthly running events from Rural People in Motion and get some advice for exercising this time of the year while we're at it.
Winter running is for conditioning. You're building your base. And what better way to start your base now, October? Federally, it's a new fiscal year. But Rural People in Motion, it's a new physical year. Start your training now.
Those stories and more coming up after a quick look back at some of the week's news. A 74-foot tree cut from the Chugach National Forest near Seward nearly a month ago arrived at the U.S. Capitol today. It's the first time the Capitol Christmas tree has come from the 49th state. Fairbanks and John Schenck drove the 4,000-mile journey minus the ocean leg from Anchorage to Tacoma.
Oh, the trip was awesome. The help along the way with the law enforcement from the Forest Service, they've been with me from day one. And without them clearing the lanes for me to make these turns, it would have been a real tough job.
It took corporate contributions totaling $650,000 to bring the tree to Washington. It will be lit at a ceremony on December 2nd by a Soldotna fifth grader. This week, an Anchorage federal court judge, H. Russell Holland, ruled in favor of some Pebble opponents, tossing out subpoenas that had sought a decade's worth of their communications with EPA. Holland's ruling did not apply to all who have been subpoenaed this fall by Pebble, but former Alaska Conservation Foundation member Sam Snyder's subpoena was quashed. He described this week what it felt like when he was served the subpoena in October.
Frustrated, mad, scared. It's not exactly the best day when you have a large multinational mining company seeking to pull you into court. I never felt that I had anything to hide, but the request was onerous. They wanted documents, emails, research, conversations dating back to 2004, in which you discuss everything from fish in Bristol Bay to mining in Alaska to the Clean Water Act.
The subpoenas relate to Pebble's lawsuit alleging violations of the Federal Advisory Committee Act by EPA. Judge Holland said Pebble should be able to obtain relevant communications from the agency rather than from the third parties. Following a nearly two-decade review, this week the U.S. Food and Drug Administration issued a final approval for the sale and consumption of genetically modified salmon. The company Aqua Bounty has developed a salmon using the genes of a Chinook and an ocean pout that grows to market size faster than wild or farmed counterparts. The FDA says it is as safe and nutritious to eat as Atlantic farm salmon. The news was not well received by the Alaska fishing industry or by Senator Lisa Murkowski, who has long called the product Frankenfish.
The announcement that came from FDA was very upsetting, very disturbing.
More with the senator's office on her next steps to fight the product later in this broadcast. A Wisconsin lab has identified the likely cause of death for one of the two brown bears that died in front of a large audience of Katmai Bear Cam viewers last month. Katmai's chief of interpretation, Roy Wood, says the cub's body tested positive for canine adenovirus, an infection that is also found in cats, dogs, and wolves.
It's called canine infectious hepatitis, and it causes liver damage and lesions in the esophagus and in the nose. And when the symptoms present themselves, they do present similar to what we saw with the cub on the camera, which is loss of motor skills and lethargy, and then ultimately convulsions, seizures leading up to death.
This disease is not necessarily rare for bears in southwest Alaska. A 1998 study showed 14% of brown bears on Kodiak Island and the Alaska Peninsula had been exposed to infectious hepatitis. Wood says biologists are not necessarily concerned at the moment, but they do intend to do more testing next summer. This week, the state of Alaska released a 20-page review of its corrections department, documenting dozens of in-custody deaths and other problems. Governor Bill Walker held a press conference to discuss the findings and announce his new head for the department.
You know, it's the lack of follow-through on investigations when there's a death. The ones that were looked into, as you'll see, were not done adequately. It was very disturbing.
Walker fired Commissioner Ron Taylor and announced the appointment of Interim Commissioner Walt Monaghan, a veteran of Alaska's Public Safety Department. And yesterday, the State Alcoholic Beverage Control Board voted to grant liquor licenses to the AC Quick Stop and Bethel Native Corporation, meaning Bethel is on track to have its first legal liquor sales in more than 40 years. The city council had previously protested the licenses, but dropped its objections after residents voted to support the sales. More on this week's news can be found at our website, kdlg.org. You're listening to Bristol Bay and Beyond on KDLG. The FDA announced this week that it has approved the sale and consumption of genetically modified salmon produced by Aqua Bounty. That news did not sit well with many Alaskans, nor environmental groups, fishing groups, and more. It met with especially intense disapproval from Alaska's senior U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski, one of the product's staunchest critics. For more on what's next, I spoke with their communications director in Alaska, Karina Peterson. Karina, thanks for coming on our program.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so it was announced this week, not totally unexpected, I suppose, that the FDA is approving the first animal product that's genetically modified for sale and human consumption, and it happens to be GMO salmon, what Senator Murkowski has long called frankenfish. She's not happy about it, I gather.
Absolutely, Senator Murkowski's not happy about it. When she found out yesterday on Thursday, she said she was livid. She's not happy about it, but yet she knows we need to move forward. We need to take those next steps.
What might those next steps be?
Senator Murkowski is calling upon grocery stores and restaurants in the U.S. to join establishments such as Safeway, Target, and some others who have already done so to pledge not to serve or sell genetically engineered salmon. She's also pushing legislatively for the mandatory labeling of genetically engineered salmon. She's going to reintroduce an updated version of her current legislation that would require further research into the risks and impacts of frankenfish, as we call it, and also to address the more urgent need now that the FDA did approve for this to go forward for mandatory labeling, because, you know, she had said a long time ago, if the FDA makes such an ill-advised decision to okay this, and at the very least, it needs to be labeled. People need to know what they're getting, what they're eating.
What are some of the concerns that the office has heard about this product over the years, but especially now that it's been approved?
Well, the senator and our office has heard concerns from Alaska's fisheries, from Alaskans just on the many unknowns of the risk that it would pose to human consumption, as well as, I said, the damage they could pose to Alaska fisheries, you know, what it could do for wild-caught Alaska salmon that we, you know, take incredible pride in.
And Karina, what do we know about the timeline for this product being farmed and eventually put to market here?
I would imagine, so since 1996, Aqua Bounty Technologies has been developing GE salmon with the hopes of receiving FDA approval to sell it for human consumption. So if they've been developing and with the hopes to get that approval, I would imagine that we could see this pretty quickly.
Well, it's certainly not come as much good news to the fishing industry here, and doesn't seem like it's being well received in a lot of circles, but we'll follow along. Karina Peterson is the Alaska Communications Director for Senator Murkowski's office. Karina, thank you for the update.
Thank you. No problem.
Much of the Bristol Bay fishing world is in Seattle this weekend for the annual Pacific Marine Expo. We've been chasing some of them around, looking for an update on the RSDA meetings, price adjustment rumors, and the expo itself, but they've proven a little shy today. But the expo is only the second biggest event for the fishery this fall. More attention and energy will be focused on the Board of Fish meeting that kicks off in less than 2 weeks in Anchorage. The deadline to provide written comment on time was yesterday, but there's still plenty of time for participants to prepare their oral testimony before the board. Marine Advisory Program agent for Bristol Bay, Gabe Dunham, spoke with me earlier this week before he, too, headed down to Seattle, and he offered a little advice on being effective at that. Gabe, it's always good to have you on the program.
Good to be here again, Dave.
Let's start with the idea of you're going to provide some oral testimony.
Sure, Dave. At its core, giving oral testimony is really just about public speaking and being effective. And in that respect, a lot of the normal rules apply. There's eye contact. I mean, if you're giving testimony at the Board of Fish, you might find that a lot of the board members are, you know, looking down at their papers, taking notes and such. But find that person out there who is looking at you and look right back at them and just try to address your message at the people that you're speaking towards. The other thing that you can kind of keep in mind, same as any other public speaking opportunity, is, of course, you know, dressing appropriately, using notes, but not really reading off of notes if you're able to do that, and also being ready for questions, whether or not you're going to be asked any questions about your testimony, notwithstanding, just be ready to answer any if they come up.
So is a time limit to public testimony. Here we are in campaign season, and we've all watched some of these debates and everything, and people love to go over their time limit. Do you think that that's a good idea if you're at Board of Fish to make them kind of time you out, or should you really try to have that thing nailed down inside of the limits?
Well, I think that it's probably best to follow the rules when it comes to time limits and public speaking, and just focus on speaking clearly throughout the time that you're given.
There's the idea that much of the effective influence a person might have with the board members or with the process here doesn't just happen at times of public testimony. There's other opportunities. What do you think? Should a person just give their testimony and head back to the hotel? Or
I think there are probably other opportunities during a Board of Fish meeting to communicate not only with board members but also other folks that are involved in the process outside of the meeting. So in that respect, yeah, I think effectively delivering your message could carry beyond just your period of public testimony.
Got to work those hallways.
That's right.
I have noticed that some of the younger folks who come to the advisory committee meetings, they give their part, their spiel, and it's back to normal business after that for them, and they sort of miss out on the follow-on that may happen in the next proposal or two or three down the line where they might look to that person and realize they're not there to answer again. So.
Sure.
What's the point of doing all this, by the way?
Well, an important thing to remember when thinking about giving testimony to the Board of Fisheries is that they want you to give them this information, because ultimately this input from the public is going to help them make their management decisions. So keeping that in the back of your mind, that these folks want to have your input, can be a helpful thing when it comes to confidence, especially if you're going to speak in front of them.
All right, Gabe Dunham, thanks so much.
You bet, Dave.
On Monday, a group of Dillingham students returned from the annual Lead On Summit in Anchorage. It's a youth leadership training put on by the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. Four teenagers from the Dillingham Youth Leadership Group attended. We asked them to share some of the things they took away from the conference and what they plan to do now.
Hi, my name is Emma Wetter. Oh, I'm a senior this year. I've gone for the past 4 years, and that allowed me to see the speaker named Lakota Hardin, I think, and she put a lot of emphasis on changing the stereotypical gender roles and saying that women don't have to be one thing and men don't have to be this thing, and that sometimes it puts, like, burdens on us and we have to carry those around. I guess I would like to bring back that women and men don't have to be what society thinks they have to be right now. They could just be whoever they want to be.
Hi, my name is Sarah Schroeder. There was one particular speaker that was my favorite at Lead On. His name was Earl Kulukak, I think. And he was telling this story about ego. So he had this little competition with a kid he didn't like very much. The competition was who could stick their tongue to a frozen pole the longest. So they did it, and he did end up winning. But in the end, he, like, lost part of his tongue, and he, like, couldn't taste for 2 years after that. So he told us, like, don't let your ego get in the way of, like, how you think, and you shouldn't, like, let it push you to do dumb things.
My name is Andrea Budbill. I was one of the chaperones for the Lead On conference. So at the conference, they provided planning time for each community to get together and come up with a community project They sat us down and we had to talk about what we saw, what we heard, what we felt, or what the youth felt and what they saw in our community. Then we talked about what we wanted the youth to see, feel, hear, to be. And all the ideas came from the youth that we were with. And then the whole idea is to design a plan that is a community project that will make a difference in the community.
My name is Brittany and I'm from YDLG. So this idea popped in my head that nobody really appreciates what they have in life. If you look around, nobody says thank you to their parents as much as they should. They have foods on their plates, they have clothes on their back, they have a roof over their head, and they barely appreciate what they have. And then so I had this idea where...
a day we give thanks.
A day where we would give thanks to them, or a weekend, a festival, or celebration.
Hi, my name is Suli. And if we submit the grant, then we will earn a certain amount of money that we need to allow this project to go running. We hope that like a lot of people from the community will come around and we'll all get together and enjoy what we have in life and give thanks all together and just be a happy community instead of being all sad and having gossip all the time with no good news and things like that.
Listening to Bristol Bay and Beyond on KDLG. The end of this year's Alaska Federation of Natives Convention was marked by tragedy as an attendee leapt to his death in front of a crowd of adults and children at the Dena'ina Civic Center. Anthony Choquette, who was 49 years old, had spent much of his life in Sandpoint and was a commercial fisherman. The reasons why he took his life that day may never be known. His death came shortly after four young people committed suicide in Hooper Bay. Many know that Alaska has the highest rate of suicide per capita in the U.S., but understanding why and doing something to change that haven't proven easy. Jennifer Canfield from KTOO in Juneau spoke with Choquette's brother-in-law, who says the family was doing everything it knew how to help the troubled man before his death. She filed this report.
He was a happy, fun-loving guy. He was really an awesome person.
Roger Holmberg says he and his wife first learned about last month's suicide at the Dena'ina Center while watching TV. He says no one called him or the family to tell him it was Anthony Choquette. They learned later after news outlets published his name.
When we heard the news that someone had committed suicide at the AFN, immediately you think, well, that's tragic in a meeting like that. And not only that, the family, how, you know, this affects the family, not knowing that it was my brother-in-law. So when I heard later that evening, about 8:30, it was like a spear went through me and I was numb.
Holmberg was asked to speak on behalf of the family. He wouldn't say what kind of problems Choquette was facing, just that the family had done everything they could to help, but he walked away from it. They'd gotten him into housing, but he left it and eventually ended up at the Brother Francis shelter in downtown Anchorage.
So we still continued to try to work with him, and the response was not good.
Friends who were near Choquette before he jumped said he wasn't acting normal that day. Holmberg said everything happened so fast that no one was able to stop him, though they tried.
He was facing some major things in his life, and you know, when people reach the bottom, they're desperate. And if we can't see that, there's signs, there's signals that people send that we're not probably sensitive enough to sometimes to catch it.
The family came together and grieved. Holmberg got to thinking there had to be something he could do.
It's the most traumatic, I believe, because it's so sudden and it's not normal. So therefore, you're left with, you know, what happened? Why did it happen? You know, what was going through the person's mind? We can't answer those questions.
As an evangelical pastor, singer, and songwriter, Holmberg travels frequently to places such as Guatemala and Haiti. He just returned from Honduras the morning of his brother-in-law's death. A few years ago, Holmberg says he had an idea to bring together members of the faith community to offer support to either those thinking about suicide or the family and friends who are ultimately left behind. He saw that while suicide prevention organizations were doing as much as they could, the spiritual aspect of suicide wasn't being addressed very much, and he wanted to change that. But the idea fell by the wayside as his travels claimed more and more of his time. After Choket's death, he finally decided to act, and about a week later, he met with a group of pastors and suicide prevention workers. He's still looking to connect with people interested in the effort.
It's comforting to know people care, but it can't be a one-time. The answer is not a one-time thing, because who knows who's next? So there must be I'm calling it a safety net for both. The one who does that and for the family, because it's so tragic. It's so beyond words.
Life is short, Holmberg said, and often our priorities are not what they should be. His priority today is to find a way to help families cope with the sudden loss of a loved one to suicide and to offer spiritual guidance to those who may be considering it.
Yeah, you got to have a priority list. People are important. That, you know, you can go broke, but people are still important. Right. Friends and relatives, you can't replace them.
If Holmberg could turn back the clock and say anything to his brother, it would be this.
I'd say life is valuable, and when you lose that in life, you're walking on dangerous ground, and we are connected together, and this is going to, anything like that would impact those who are left behind in a very, very, very bad way. And so I would say we need you to seek professional help.
That story came to us from Jennifer Canfield at APRN member station KTO in Juneau. This is Bristol Bay and Beyond on KDLG. Back in a moment. Noticed a national conversation this week about how to handle refugees from the war-torn country of Syria. Many have asked the federal government to put the brakes on resettling the refugees until they can be better vetted for security concerns. Others say that's not keeping with an American tradition of welcoming the world's needy inside our borders. It was in 1883 that Emma Lazarus penned the lines now engraved in a plaque at the Statue of Liberty: "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse from your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed, to me. I'll lift my lamp beside the golden door." Well, this week, Ruthie Scoter Erie of Dillingham penned her own lines as she thought about how rural communities like this one reach out to our own new arrivals, those who come and often go quickly. Her essay is titled, "How Do We Welcome the Stranger?"
Small town. We're isolated geographically, so we hunker down. We enjoy the seasons, our traditions, our lives, and we make our own fun. There are strangers that arrive, health workers, social service agency workers, fishermen and women, tourists, consultants, they all come and go. We live here. We are fine. We say hi, and we are friendly. There is we, there is us, there is them and they. We wait. We watch. They're here for a while, and then they leave. It's happened for years. It's the way that it is. So? What's wrong? What's right? Here's the thing. We are all strangers. We all live in this separation mentality and in this community. Do we miss the richness and fun that a stranger in our midst might provide? Do they assume that they'll never fit in or find lasting friends here? Do we offer more than a passing hello to the stranger? Maybe they would welcome an invitation to get to know us, to enter our lives. They serve us. They teach our children. They care for us in the ER. They arrange for a medevac or a dental appointment for us. They complete the paperwork for our health care, or they attend us in the labor room. They have their own busy lives, right? They have their jobs, and they have one another. Or do they? Perhaps some of them are lonely here. Maybe they're here because they love that wilderness, the quiet. Perhaps they'll witness us, and it's hard for them. We certainly take time to visit with one another. It's the way we live and work here, together, friendly. Maybe they see our solidarity, our team spirit, our resilience, our traditions and customs, and it excites them. Maybe they're deeply attracted to us in our ways. Their experience of us could increase their sense of personal isolation. We don't really know. We would never ask them that kind of personal question. Why should we? They will be leaving soon. Soon enough. It's part of the seasonal nature of our lives here in this place, on the shores of Nushagak Bay, or Kachemak Bay, or the river, or the lake. They have jobs they cannot talk about. They keep our secrets, those stories that unfold in tears or tirades. They receive us and our families every day. It's part of their work. How? How do we receive them? Yep, we met them at church. We met them at the student conferences. We said hello in the grocery store. How do we offer just a bit more, just in case they might really, really appreciate our sincere welcome, our extra moment? Strangers are only strangers for so long. Strangers can become friends, and a sense of friendship and companionship can happen in an instant. Deep, abiding friendships do take longer to cultivate. But what could be done today to begin something that might be delightful, enriching, educational, or just fun? How do we welcome the stranger?
That essay was brought to us by Ruthie Skoder-Erie. If you'd like to write your own piece for this program, send an email to me at dave@kdlg.org. Back in a moment. Tomorrow there will be another chance to get together for a fun run in the Dillingham area. Following on the heels of the successful zombie run last month, a rather obvious theme this month is a turkey trot. There will be a 2, 4, or 6-mile course. The group coordinating this event is Rural People in Motion. The guy who started that, first more than a decade ago, and for the second time about 2 months ago, is Mike Halko, who doesn't mind being called Coach. Mike is passionate about his exercise and also encouraging others to get up and get moving as well. I asked him in to tell us a little bit more about the group and the runs and a little bit about a rumor I heard that he's related to Superman. Really? Well, kind of.
Oh, yes, yes. That's my Uncle Jerry actually is the writer. Jerry Siegel is the writer of Superman. He married my mother's sister, Joanne Kovach, who was actually the inspiration for Lois Lane. So it's kind of interesting. I'm the nephew of Superman. So I've always aspired to his creativity.
Do you think that played in through the years a little bit? Was it ever there in the back of your mind?
I think in the back of my mind, you're saying, you know, here's a young high school kid, 18 years old, that, you know, a lot of oppression, just coming out of the Depression. June 1st, 1938, they come out with issue number one, DC Comic Strips, Man of Steel. Faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than locomotive, able to leap tall buildings in a single bound. Look up in the sky, it's a bird, it's there. Every kid wanted to be Superman. And in the back of my mind, I said, you know, that's pretty cool. I'd like to, you know, get in pretty good shape. But what was more pivotal, early tragedy in my life, my father died when I was 3, right in front of me, heart attack, boom. He didn't take care of himself. You know, he drank hard, smoked. And that had probably more of an impact on me than anything else. I said, you know, I'm going to do things differently, eat properly, exercise, take care of my heart, because I'd like to be around a lot longer. To me, the idea of Superman is there's a superhero in all of us, and there's a superhero in everyone in this community, and we just have to draw on that. And by having an athletic opportunity, you walk, run.
Speaking of athletic opportunities, Rural People in Motion, do people remember it from a decade ago?
Absolutely. During the regional cross-country meet.
This was just a few months ago?
Yeah,
great day.
It was a beautiful day, a little chilly, you know, but the course, great venue. You had kids in from Kilegenic News, Stuyahawk. And we're just walking around talking and said, hey, Mike, how you doing? Any opportunity bringing back Rural People in Motion? because people remembered it. And so just started talking to some of the teachers, some of the other folks said, yeah, that'd be fun. And so the wheel started turning, and we picked out some dates, some themes. And before we knew it, October, we had the zombie pirate run.
And people came in costume.
Absolutely. It was so cool.
So the folks that participated, I wasn't there that day, but the folks that participated, did they enjoy?
They had a blast.
And it's not the most rigorous course. It's just a good opportunity to come out and do something, right?
Exactly. We purposely picked that course because it was flat, it was fast. But again, your time's your own business. Zombies and pirates are a terribly underserved population. The zombies, their form's terrible. You know, they're dragging one leg. And, you know, they really want to try to improve their form because they have things to do. And the pirates, they just have a drinking problem. We promoted a educational wellness tip, you know, drink more water, back off the grog. And we just have a good time with this.
Good. Turkey trot is tomorrow. It seems like there's a turkey trot probably in every city in the United States. So it's nice to put Dillingham on that map now, too.
Absolutely.
Everybody likes the turkey trot.
Absolutely. There's one in Cleveland. There's one in Brockport, New York. Anchorage has one, too. And why not? Why shouldn't we have our turkey trot as well? And it's just get out. You know, it's getting a little bit darker. You can fight cabin fever. We can be consistent with these things, and it's just having that opportunity to express yourself in a non-threatening manner where we can go out there, you can walk, you can run. Again, your time's your own business. We're going to have some awards for people, you know, to recognize that you went the distance, hot chocolate at the finish line, and also some educational information for people to continue this healthy lifestyle.
Speaking of continuing the healthy lifestyle, Rural People in Motion aims to do an event every month.
Absolutely. The next one after the Turkey Trot is going to be on January 2nd. It's going to be ringing in the new year. It kind of sandwiches between the regular Christmas in December, New Year's, and the Epiphany, the Russian Orthodox Christmas. And then, of course, February, you have a sweetheart run, Valentine's Day, March, you know, Chase the Leprechaun.
All right.
And so on and so forth. So we're going to have something every month.
Mike, how about some tips for people getting out this dark and kind of icy time of the year to do a little bit more outside exercise? Briefly, some of your own personal tips.
Well, for consistency's sake, most people like to exercise first thing in the morning. And if you do so, guess what, folks? It doesn't get light till 9 o'clock, so you have to be visible. And if you're running or walking, whatever you're doing, you want to walk at facing traffic. So you're seeing, they can see you, you can see the traffic, you're visible, you have good traction. You want to stay on your feet. I've known people that you fall, you hurt a shoulder, break a wrist. Again, traction. So winter running is for conditioning. You're building your base. And what better way to start your base now, October? Federally, it's a new fiscal year. But Rural People in Motion, it's a new physical year. Start your training now so you can go right through the holidays, right through Thanksgiving, right through Christmas with the habit in place.
Mike, before I let you go, do you have any favorite running songs that I can cue up here as we wrap up?
Wow. You know, I'll tell you what, the boss does it for me. He does Born to Run. That gets me moving right away.
You got it. Coach Mike Alco, you'll see him out at the Turkey Trot tomorrow. He's with Rural People in Motion. Mike, good to have you in the studio. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you very much, Dave, and keep striding, smiling.
Live version there from the boss. Jackson Brown probably would have worked fine too. Well, that's it for this week's show. This program will take a few weeks off for the holiday and for Board of Fish, where your KDLG news team will be working hard to bring you coverage live from the Egan Center. I'm your host, Dave Benninger. Look forward to seeing you back here on KDLG's Bristol Bay and Beyond sometime next month. Bye-bye.